Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine reporting a safe distance from Washington, D.C., just across the river in Alexandria, Virginia. I did take a recent drive to Washington, didn't leave my car. We got to have social distancing, but just to get out of the house a bit and look at the various monuments and things that inspire me in Washington. And I drove by the Washington Monument. Now, those of you that have been there know that, of course, the monument is a huge obelisk, but it's surrounded by some very tall American flags, about 15 feet tall or so. And it struck me that all of the flags were flying at full mast, every one of them. Flags that had been lowered when 9 people died to the space shuttle tragedy, that were lowered in memory of victims of gun violence, that were certainly lowered after 3,000 American lives were taken in September 11th, 2001. But here we are with 100,000 Americans dead in just the last 2 months. And the flags were flying high. In all the rush to determine, should we open, should we close, should our economy be open or shut, wash your hands, wear your mask, practice social distancing, stay inside, all important stuff. How the Trump administration failed to protect these lives, very important, and I've dealt with it at length. But have we lost touch of what's really happening right now, all around us? 100,000 Americans that were alive 2 months ago are dead now due to this virus and due to a cause that was largely preventable. Now, I know it's a novel coronavirus. I realize we have no immunity to it. But New Zealand stopped the death count. There are virtually none there. South Korea, 200, 300, they had it the same day we did. 4% of the world's population we are in the United States with 30% of the world's cases. But what are we to think about their lives lost? And are we doing anything to memorialize them? The last big event in American history, I mean big event. I mean the event that every single American knew about when it happened and cared about it when it happened in my lifetime was September 11, 2001. I'm told the Kennedy assassination was that way. I'm told the Vietnam War was that way. Civil rights movement. It's all before my time. No, I remember September 11, 2001 like it was yesterday. I remember the day I woke up. I remember the day I heard about the tragedy. I remember the fear. I remember the sadness. I remember the moment the World Trade Center collapsed. And I knew that thousands of people were in those buildings dying in that moment. And that was tragic. And it led to all kinds of consequences, good and bad. Many would argue they were bad. Many would argue that our wars fought afterwards lost more lives. But 3,000 lives is a pittance compared to 100,000 lives in 2 months lost. To give an idea of the scale of this tragedy, we compare it to whatever we can. I just gave you September 11th. Pearl Harbor had 2,400 Americans die on December 7th, 1941. That was considered a big deal. Vietnam War, 58,000 Americans dead, many more Vietnamese. 58,000 Americans dead over a period of more than a decade. Bookended two decades. And that was such a big deal that Americans took to the streets protesting. The Democratic National Convention of 1968. Hey, hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today? I guess we can't march. Understandably, social distancing. But the only protests I see are the ones arguing that we should reopen sooner and have more dead. How are we to think of the scope of this? Well, one way I've been thinking about it, and it's grim. This is a grim show. We are going to get to more hopeful stuff at the end, I promise. And we are going to talk about philosophy and religion. I'm going to get there. But right now, I want to focus on the scope of the tragedy. So if you look at the Holocaust, some 6 million Jews were murdered between the years of 1939 and 1945. About 1 million dead a year. Now I realize it went up and went down. It started slow. But 1 million dead a year. 1 million dead a year is a little under 100,000 a month. We've had 100,000 in 2 months just in America. 330,000 worldwide in 2 months, maybe 3 months. So yeah. We're reaching that scope. And our flags are flying full mast. With all the discussion and Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx and Donald Trump taking whatever miracle snake oil drug he can push off and make a profit off of, what about the people that are dying? What about the people that are dead? And dead without their family members around them? Dying isolated, understandably so because of quarantine rules, understandably so because you don't want to catch the disease from your dying family member. So they're dying alone. Some 75%, maybe 80% of the times people are put on ventilators because of COVID-19, they don't take them off until the person is dead. I saw in the news a doctor talking about trying to have some humanity as he placed the ventilator in the person's body, as he intubated is the technical medical term, because he recognized there was a 3 out of 4 chance that he was going to be the last human being that had that kind of interaction. Their last chance to speak, their last words, 3 out of 4 times, the patient's last words were right before he put the ventilator on. And yet these stories are not getting that much news attention. We're focused, as we should be, on protecting ourselves, preventing us from getting disease, preventing us from spreading disease, anger at the people who are going to the beaches and congregating and doing stupid things in bars and actually making things worse and killing more people. The pastors who are opening up their churches demanding religious freedom, as if religious freedom gave you the right to murder people in your congregation through your own negligence. But shouldn't we be focusing on the lives lost? At least as much? Shouldn't we be lowering our flags? I realize we can't even have funerals. We can't even have funerals, right? People have to sit 10 feet apart, 6 feet apart from each other. 10's better. But shouldn't we have some media coverage? Shouldn't we have some discussion? Do you know someone dead due to COVID-19? I do. 100,000 lives, twice Vietnam, in 2 months. Now, don't quibble and tell me it's only 92 or 93,000. It turns out that at least 20, 25% of the deaths are undercounted, and it's understandable why. In the early days of the disease, people didn't know it was a disease. We haven't tested. Our testing was way below other countries. So many, many people have had the disease, then have been counted, and have died of the disease, then have been counted. Let's not quibble over the numbers. 92,000 is hard enough, and it's going to grow more and more and more. The title of today's show is Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? And in the course of this hour, I want to explore that impossible question. The hardest question a religion or a philosophy has to answer. I want to explore why we even ask the question. Where does this question come from? And how do people of faith, how should we address this question? You know, if you don't believe in God, if you're an atheist, if you're agnostic, you're not sure, the question's probably less tough for you, right? Because you don't presume that good things happen to good people or that bad things happen to bad people. We are at the fate of luck and our genes and our science, and it's not even a question you ask. But if you are a person of faith, how do we address this question? How do we deal with someone whose time had not come yet, but is coming now due to a worldwide pandemic, when 99% of those deaths could have been prevented in the United States to begin with, the way South Korea or New Zealand or Taiwan or Vietnam or Germany did? I want to approach this philosophically, religiously, and emotionally in a very special hour. If you want to leave a comment, if you're watching live on Facebook, please do, and I'll address your comments when we continue right after this.
Never confuse Mark Levine with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Don't think my producer, Mark Romaldi, will mind my sharing the comment he just gave to me. He writes, losing my mom to cancer, she battled when I was 13 through 17 years old, was devastating. I am forever changed. She knew me better than I knew myself, but I was able to say goodbye. I was there when she passed. I was the last person in the room at the end. Yet I cannot imagine the overwhelming anguish and fury I would feel if I could not have been there with her. People are dying right now, dying in massive numbers, dying in numbers that, well, America hasn't seen, or the world hasn't seen, in most cases, since World War II. And they're dying alone. I remember this woman in New Jersey who had six kids. She was in her 40s, dying, and the kids could only be there at the window, couldn't hold her hand, couldn't say goodbye. You know, if you got a ventilator down your tube, you can't speak either. Can't speak. Can't be there to touch. And our flags are flying at full mast. And I get the politics. Trump doesn't want to focus on people dying any more than Lyndon Baines Johnson wanted to focus on people dying in Vietnam. It's politically dangerous, I guess, to recognize that people are dying. Americans are dying. It's all your fault. But it is a tragedy, and one that we need to recognize. And it's happening in red states and blue states. It's happening mostly among those that are elderly, but also children, also young people, people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, not just 70s, 80s, 90s. And we're not talking about it very much. Sure, we talk about wash your hands and social distancing and what's going on in other countries and testing and PPE and reagents, and Donald Trump is sending us off on goose chases with hydroxychloroquine and all kinds of snake oil. But what about the emotional impact of losing your loved one, particularly when it didn't have to happen? Again, there's nothing in my lifetime that comes close. The only thing I have to compare it to is September 11th. And we're already at 30 times September 11th. Really, the only scale that anyone has of memory would be World War II. My parents are in their 80s. My mom was 5 when the world ended, when World War II ended. My dad was 9. So they have some vague memories. Very vague. I mean, that was a time when, yes, more American lives were lost, although over a period of 4 years, not 2 months. That was a time when worldwide there was more tragedy, 40 million dead, yes. But there are not many people alive today that can remember that tragedy. And it's true that 100 years ago in the 1918-1919 flu pandemic, well, some 600,000 plus Americans were dead. Some 30 million worldwide, a third of the world got it. But that's not in living memory, that's history. For us, for you, for me, this is it. Do you recognize it? Do you see the forest for the trees? When you're deep in the forest, all you see is trees. Do you recognize the great forest around you? Do you realize that you are living in a world historic moment? This time, this day, this period of time, the spring, summer, fall of 2020, every living human being from about age 5 or 6 on up will remember this time. Years from now, people will talk back about the pandemic of 2020. Do you recognize the moment you're living in? Do you recognize the tragedy going on all around? You know, in the rush to fix things, in the rush to make things better, we often don't take time to mourn. We're so busy trying to heal, as we should be, to save the living, that we don't pay respects to the dying or the dead. We're not doing it now. When we come back, I do want to ask that question. Why do bad things happen to good people? And try very hard to get some answers. We'll be right back after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal America. He's Mark Levine.
As we near the 100,000 death mark of Americans killed by a pandemic that other countries have managed to prevent from coming to their shores, including countries very close to the source of the virus, like South Korea or Taiwan or Vietnam, not to mention New Zealand and Australia and Germany and other countries that know how to deal with this. As we ask ourselves, why are 100,000 Americans dead that were alive 2 months ago? And try to wrap our minds around the scope of this disaster, of this tragedy. I want to ask that age-old religious question, maybe the oldest philosophical question, the oldest religious question out there. Why do bad things happen to good people? It's such a difficult question, some would say the hardest question of religion, that there's a whole body of work and philosophy devoted to answering that question, that one question. It's called Theodicy, T-H-E-O-D-I-C-Y, Theodicy. And Theodicy is the study, the religious study, the theological study of why bad things happen to good people. Now, if you don't believe in God, it's not a question that you really even have to ask. But if you do, well, let's explore how religions have dealt with this question. The early religions, the Pharaoh in Egypt, was considered to be a representative of God on earth, right? So why did it happen? Because the Pharaoh willed it, because God willed it, and you suffer and you die and you're miserable, and that's just the way life is. That's just the way the whole world works. Know your place. If you're a slave, you're a slave. There is no hope. But the Jewish people came up with a new idea. The idea was that God was all-powerful and God was all-good. God freed the slaves. God gave hope to the hopeless. God gave courage to people who were suffering in the hope that they would stop suffering. And it's a very powerful, compelling vision that spread to Christianity and to Islam and all the monotheistic religions. But you can also find it in the Eastern religions, in Buddhism and Hinduism, Shintoism, Confucianism. The idea, really a simplistic idea, that if you're good, you will get benefits from God. And if you're bad, you won't. We hear it in the Santa Claus song, right? He knows if you've been sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. So you better be good for goodness sake. In an ancient way, this is all part of Jewish tradition. We teach that every year on Rosh Hashanah, the first day of the Jewish New Year, God opens the books, opens the balance books, and gives you 10 days of repentance and writes down all your deeds of the past year and then makes a choice. Will you be inscribed in the book of life or will you be sealed in the book of death? Because of your acts, every action has consequences. You smoke tobacco, you might enjoy it for a while, but hey, you're going to die of lung cancer. That's the risk you take, right? You drive too fast or recklessly, you might enjoy that, but man, there are risks. If you do bad things, the Bible tells you, Deuteronomy, right? You pray to God and you worship him and you provide your sacrifices and God will put rain down on your fields. The Native Americans, right? You do the dance, right? And you get the rain you need for your fields. It's a quid pro quo. God rewards those that are good. God punishes those that are bad. And in some sense, those of us that have a sense of faith, we still kind of believe that. We still think, God will get you. The Eastern religions called it karma, right? It's bad karma. You do bad things to people, it'll come around. It'll come around. You harm someone, you deserve it. You deserve your fate. But if you're a good person, if you're an innocent child, well, you don't deserve your fate. That's the tragedy, right? 400,000 dead due to smoking cigarettes. That's a tragedy. But, you know, they chose to smoke. And even though it's addictive, well, we get it. But no one took action to expose themselves to COVID. Or did they? When the AIDS epidemic came out, the early people could not protect themselves. And they died. A whole generation of gay men ceases to exist. Those that are about 10 years older than I am. Those that were in their 20s in the 70s and 80s. But after we knew what the disease did, we did know how to protect ourselves, right? There are ways to prevent getting AIDS if you're careful. COVID's tougher. But we have ways. Social distancing, gloves, masks. But you know, you can be in the grocery store and some jerk can sneeze in your face. The idea, the teleological idea, which is a fancy word meaning that every action has a reason. The idea, the simple religious idea, is what we might tell a child, right? Hey, kids, eat your vegetables, and I'll read you a bedtime story. Don't eat your vegetables, and you can't have your ice cream. Quid pro quo. Our whole society is designed around it, right? We could tell people don't murder because it's bad, and we do. But we also tell them don't kill because you'll be punished, right? Life sentence, maybe the death penalty, maybe just 10 to 25 years in jail. Don't steal. It's wrong, but also because you'll be punished. Sometimes we have silly laws, right? Don't smoke marijuana, not because of the health effects, but because the law will get you. Marijuana is less dangerous than cigarettes, but that's a discussion for another day. My point is, this quid pro quo is the kind of thing you tell a child. It's the kind of thing you tell unsophisticated people that are trying to understand the world around them in a way that they can comprehend, that they can grasp. The idea of God being all-powerful is too much for us to grasp. And we certainly don't understand all the science. Certainly not then. Even today, we don't understand all the science, but certainly not thousands of years ago, right? The laws of gravity we might barely get, but microbes, disease. Before microscopes, we didn't know what was causing things. There were plagues. God sent 10 plagues down on the Egyptians because God was angry. And that's why they had locusts. And that's why they had cattle disease. And that's why the Hebrews could escape their slavery, because God was good and he was using natural disasters to punish those that were bad. You got it? It's a very simple way. It's actually a very satisfying way of understanding the universe. Very satisfying. All I gotta do is be good and I get rewarded. And if the question is, well, why didn't I get rewarded in this life? Ah, well, Jews, Christians, Muslims, that we have an answer. You'll get it in the afterlife. Yeah, you did good and you died anyway. One answer to why do bad things happen to good people is, yeah, they were tortured and murdered, died alone due to COVID, but they'll have a wonderful place in the world to come. And that's comforting. And people believe that. And I'm not telling you not to, even as I explore the problems with that philosophy. It is very comforting, right? I feel it, right? Mom, dad, grandma, Uncle Joe looking down on us from above, watching us, knowing they're there, because they are there. They're in our hearts. They had a hard life, but they got a benefit in the world to come. It all works out in the end, see? It's also, to you agnostics and atheists out there, it's a little too easy, isn't it? A little bit of rationalizing. The Bible says the rains come if you're good. The Native American prays for rain and gets the rain. And if the rain doesn't come, saying, well, he died of starvation, but he got good rains in heaven. A little easy. So religions then went to the next step and said, well, how do we explain this? If God is all powerful and God is all good, why would he let bad things happen to good people? Why did 6 million Jews die in the Holocaust? Why were good religious people tortured and murdered? How do you explain that? Why does the hurricane come and the tornado and the plague and kill innocent people who've done nothing wrong? We all know example after example of good people that died young. Billy Joel sings about it, right? Only the good die young. And we all know evil people who've lived way past the time we wish they'd live. So the Bible went further. Some of the later books of the Bible try to explore this question, and there's a whole book of the Bible devoted to the question of theodicy. The book of Job. Right? You remember Job? Job did everything right in the eyes of God. Job did everything. He prayed. He was good to his family. He did every single thing right. He was a good, righteous man, and he was tempted by Satan. That's actually where the term Satan comes from. It's the adversarial part of God, the part of God we don't understand. Hasatan means adversary. This whole idea of devil and all, that was Christianity took it and ran with that ball. But this the whole concept began with the book of Job, where Satan tempts him. Hey, why don't you do this? Why don't you turn away from God? Why don't you turn away from good works? And Job says no. Job says, I'm going to be good. So Satan tortures him, causes all his flocks to die. That's very important if you're trying to live off the land. And Job is still good. So Satan kills his wife and children. Immense tragedy to this perfectly good man, at least according to the Bible. And Job doesn't understand, but he remains true to God. And the best part of the book of Job is that it poses the question really well, why do bad things happen to good people? And the answer it gives is pathetic. In fact, most people think that that last chapter of Job was added on. That the original Job simply added with this good man suffering despite the fact that he was good. Asking the question. One of the things we learn is sometimes the question is way more interesting and way more important than the answer. And the whole book of Job is all about asking that question. Why do bad things happen to good people? And what's the answer in Job? Well, most people, most scholars think it was appended on, because people couldn't deal with a question without an answer. And how does it answer it? Well, in half a chapter, it says, hey, Job got he married new wives. He got new children. He got his goats back, twice as many goats and sheep and he ever had before. He was richer and happier than ever before. See, there's no problem here. Job got everything, as if the loss of his first wife and children wouldn't harm him for the rest of his life. My mind just went to Joe Biden, who of course lost his first wife and kids in a car accident, remarried a very wonderful woman, Dr. Jill Biden, and now he's just lost his son, Beau Biden. Story of Job. It's not satisfying to say that Job got twice as many goats and chickens and got a new wife and new kids, is it? No, the questions of Job are powerful and profound. That one chapter at the end where they try to wrap it all up neatly, yeah, it's unsatisfying. But I'm going to try to answer this question. I'm going to try to answer this question that's true to my religious tradition, perhaps yours. Try to answer in a way that makes me feel good, because after all, that's part of what religion is about. I'm not an existentialist. You remember the existentialists, Jean-Paul Sartre and Samuel Beckett? They believed that the world was completely meaningless. Nothing mattered. Nothing was important. We're all going to die, and we have very little time on Earth, and nothing we do matters. And so we might as well just give up hope. And existentialism is a perfectly logical philosophy, except it logically leads to suicide. Because if nothing matters, if we're not on the world for any reason, why stay? Why remain? We're just dust. So while I accept that existentialism is a logical philosophy, it ain't the one I share. When we come back, I want to give you my answer to this question, my religious answer to the question of why bad things happen to good people, and try to tie it all back to the novel coronavirus. and the plague in which we live. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
We've been asking this entire hour, why do good things happen to bad people? How does a religious person deal with that contradiction? If you're an atheist, if you're an existentialist, there is no contradiction. But a religious person says, if God is all powerful and all good, why does evil exist in the world? And the answer, I think, is there is no answer. Now, don't run away, because I do have one. But when I find a problem is unsolvable, sometimes I go back to the axioms, to what went into that question. Maybe I was wrong at the very beginning. If God is all powerful and God is all good, why does God allow evil? There's no answer to that question. But maybe God's not all powerful, or maybe not, God's not all good. If God is partly evil, you know, if you're a Zoroastrian and you believe in the yin-yang of good and evil, then God maybe just does some evil things. Satan, the devil, right? Devil made me do it. That's one answer. Again, not a very satisfactory one for someone like me who's trying to make the world a better place. So I take comfort in the other answer, the one that came from the medieval Kabbalists. Maybe God is not all powerful. Maybe, this is the concept of Tikkun Olam, maybe God withdrew a bit from the universe in order to give mankind the free will to make changes. Maybe it isn't all predestined as the Puritans taught, but maybe our life choices matter. Maybe we are partners with God in making this a better world. Maybe bad things happen not because God wills bad things to happen, but because we human beings didn't stop bad things from happening. Maybe this is a lesson that we can change. We are more powerful than we thought. We aren't helpless in the universe. It is our job to make the world a better place. God isn't all powerful, but God can still be all good. God still can be that voice in our hearts that tells us to do the right thing, even if we don't get immediately rewarded for it. That goodness that's in most, maybe all human beings, but certainly in most of us. Maybe God is just good. Maybe the omnipotent ruler of the universe, that's to get people thousands of years ago to believe in God. But we, as more thoughtful creatures, can just work to do good, to make the world a better place, to get testing and contact tracing, to bring ventilators and PPE, to encourage governments to do the right things, to bring democracy, to end oppression, to help fix poverty, to help learn how to fight climate change, even hurricanes, no natural disaster. Don't blame acts of God, blame acts of humanity. If we work together to make this world a better place, we can do the work of God. We can be the power that God himself or herself or itself just is not. We can complete and be all powerful by working with him. If you have a U.S. flag outside your home, and many of you do, will you please fly it at half-mast? Recognize the tragedy that we're in and resolve to do what you can to feed the hungry, to help those without jobs, to make all of us a better place, and then you will be doing the work of God. This is Mark Levine signing off.